All right. I'd like to invite our panel members to... So Amanda and Marianne, if you'd like to come to the stage, you'll have to go around so that the stairs are on the other side, but to come and join us on the stage. And then we're really excited to welcome a few other members. So Abby is joining us from Harrison Early Childhood Centre, Northside. We have Alice from Catholic Education Office. So I'm just going to go down there. That's all right. and we have Natasha as well. Sorry, Natasha, from Kids Biz, who's joining us up on stage as well. I've done it. Okay. So we're going to try something new, and obviously we're not IT savvy in our branch, but we'll get there. We're going to try a process called Slido, which once again is an opportunity for you to ask questions and have them come to us and come to the panel unaccountable way, anonymous way, thank you. And that way you can ask some questions. We do have a few that we'd like to start with, but please ask any questions that you'd like from any member of the panel. We tried to make sure that it was a variety of different people, so we've got outside school hours, care present, Catholic education as a system, Northside as a community service, and then our fantastic experts as well. I will pass over to my colleague Liam and see if you'd like to start the first question.
Hi everyone. I think we normally do thanks at the end, but I might just start by thanking the panel. There's a lot of experience and leadership and knowledge sitting in front of you. I know you've heard a lot from Marianne and Amanda, but people working in the sector. And just for everyone here today, the fact that you've taken time to come out and think about leadership and governance in a really complex, difficult sector that we work in, that often isn't valued and often isn't acknowledged, and the leadership that takes place in this space is... I always say, unless you've done it, you can't explain it. And when you try to explain to people who haven't done that work, it's really difficult because of how complex it is. So thank you to the panel. I want to start with, for me, when I think about the role I have at Northside, which is not a nominated supervisor role, but is in that approved provider space, the relationship between the nominated supervisor and the approved provider, for me, is critical. They're both legislated roles. It's very different than other leadership roles where... for someone in a leadership role, they might be performance managed. In a leadership role under the NQF, you know, there can be fines, there can be prosecution. So maybe just starting with, I'm going to start with Abby, because I work with Abby, so I'm going to pick on her first. But Abby's also an incredible nominated supervisor with 106 children now attending every day. What's most important for you, and then I'd love to hear from the rest of the panel, what's important about that relationship between a nominated supervisor and approved provider for each of you?
I think for me as a nominated supervisor, it's important that you have a relationship with the approved provider. As what Marianne have mentioned before, it needs to be a partnership. So we, the five nominated supervisors of the Northside organization, we do meet with the approved provider every fortnight. So we have fortnightly meetings talking about the NQF, seeking guidance, talking about the challenges that we face, and also reflecting on the practices that we have and looking at the processes and the system that's working or what we can do better in terms of complying with the NQF and the national law and regulation. Yeah.
I guess really, it's all about quality, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you don't listen to the nominated supervisors, you can have great policies and procedures in place, but if they're not met, they're not fit for purpose, they're not working in services, you're not going to achieve quality. So it's about listening to the people on the ground, working day in, day out, knowing their families and the community.
Thank you. Definitely agree with those
the nominated supervisor role is a very, very specific role. It's a very detailed role, and it carries a lot of responsibility, and often that person can feel that they are very much stuck in the middle between the governance, sort of a structure or a bigger organisation structure, and also trying to do a HR job and a childcare job and a service operational job all in one, all at the same time, and trying to check off all those things. So it's really important that the approved provider or the organisation make sure that that person feels supported, works with them to build their team, build their roles, their capacities and their understanding of what they need to do, and listens when they say, I'm having trouble with this. Sometimes they'll raise that they're having trouble with something, and it may not be the exact thing. So it's really important to sit with them properly, drill down into what that is, because sometimes you find the solution is actually a bit to the side of where you thought it was, and the problem of not having time for one thing is that they weren't well-resourced for something else elsewhere. So I find that that's really important, that that nominated supervisor, who bears a lot of weight in some senses, is given that full support and that understanding, and also that their role is supported from above down to the very, very educator level to say, no, this person deserves your respect and your attention. What they are doing is critically important.
Thank you. Amanda or Marianne, do you want to take over?
As far as the approved provider side, I would say transparency. It's really, really important that we share risk and that we share the load, and that nominated supervisors and approved providers are really open with each other and actually work it through together and have a relationship about, this is not about being in trouble, or this is not about that you're in trouble or someone else is in trouble. This is actually about having a really open and transparent conversation where we can work things out and work it together.
I was going to use that word relationship as well. You talked before, Leah, about investing in things, and I think this is one example of investing in the relationship between the nominated supervisor and the approved provider. Because as we were talking about before, governance is a shared responsibility. You have to be on the same page. And I would say that this might be a superficial way of looking at things, but the nominated supervisor is the advocate for children, families and staff, and I would see the approved provider as the champion for the nominated supervisor in the ideal scenario.
Thank you so much. We've had a couple of questions from the audience, which is great. I'm going to, some of Amanda's presentation around accountability for teams has resonated. So I'm going to combine a couple of questions. But we're sort of asking about how, when staff are, they're performing well, but they're often forgetting little things. And probably, maybe signing even out might be a good example of that. I think it's always important for me to remember the difficulty of that role and the amount of things people have to remember. But, they're saying, I've kept reminding them, I've put systems in place. How do we sort of go about managing performance without jeopardising those relationships? I don't know if anyone wanted to tackle that one first. A nice and boring.
Managing staff, always the easy component. I think it's starting with building relationships. You have to have a relationship with your staff. You have to have an understanding who they are, what their drivers are, what gets them up in the morning and actually brings them to work, and what are they not sleeping about, actually having that relationship. So always starting with, let's have a relationship and a conversation, because that makes things much easier. It's also then about making sure that I think that you need to be really clear with the expectations, both sides. So staff have an expectation of you, as the manager. Well, what does that mean? What does that look like for you? What does it mean when you say that you want me to support you? What does that look like for you as an individual? And when I say that I need you to, my expectation of you is to be open or transparent, this is what it means. So unpacking all of those sorts of things really openly and really clearly. If it's then getting to a point where somebody is actually not performing, it's having respectful, open conversations, not on the floor in front of all of the rest of the staff. It's about starting with what's the barrier for you to understand or to take on or work within. So start with actually trying to seek to understand what's happening for that person first and foremost before you turn around and say this is the first final formal warning on your job, and if you don't do it. So I'd always start with having an understanding of what's going on for that individual and work through that way. If I can take it a step back as well, relating to our friend the pufferfish, in terms of getting in shape, I would ask how well do you know your staff as people? So even before you get to the, tell me what's happening for you in this situation, which is so incredibly important, do you know what's going on in their life? Are they just staff to you, or are they people? And so what's your relationship like with them so that you can be on the front foot? So when something does happen, you've got an established relationship to work from.
I guess on a practical level too, it's bringing it back to that person, why they're not doing it. Do they just think it's a piece of paper that you've got to fill in just for the sake of it and file them in a drawer? Or do they actually know why we need to go to sign in and sign out for that? So it's actually making it and pull out reasons and say, well, this is why we have to have it, this is what happened this time, and actually making it relevant and know why they need to do it, not just assuming they know, because quite often they don't know why we need to do it, that piece of paper.
I would also just add that remember all the wonderful skills we've got with doing this with children. I'm not suggesting we treat our educators and other staff like children, but remember they might learn differently. They might need more time. They might need more prompting. They might need more regular feedback sometimes. Think about all the wonderful things we try and do to make children feel really great and confident, and shift some across to how we're talking to our teams. Really think about what they need, how they work, and how can we positively move them in the direction we need to go? That doesn't mean avoiding difficult conversations, but it means trying to look for a positive after, much like we would with a child.
Oh. I was going to jump in from the regulator's point of view. That's perfect, because that's exactly what I was going to say. It's about the relationships that you have, and often people don't know why. You know, why has a specific reg been written? What does it mean? You know, what, going back to, you know, why are we getting people to sign in and out of rooms? It's about accountability to the people in the room. It's about understanding about child safety and supervision and making sure that children are being protected at all times. It took me back, I don't know whether to say this, my first provider from the ACT is in the room here, and I became a room leader at 19 of a nursery room, and I remember being so excited about the job because, you know, you're a room leader at 19 and it's all very exciting, but actually sitting down with them and talking through the expectations of that role, and also the fact that you've got a duty of care and accountability to six-week-old babies, to parents, to the other staff in the room, and what that means to your provider, to your nominated supervisor, different names then, but still the same roles. And I think it's really important that you actually have that opportunity to have a conversation, have documentation, and really understand what that role means for that person. So, I think holding staff accountable is taking time as you, as the provider or the nominated supervisor, to invest that time in your educators.
There's a really great question here. It's a shame they're anonymous, because I want to congratulate these people and I want to answer these questions, but I'm not going to. How can we be more strategic rather than reactive, noting the range of external factors and challenges? What would you recommend to focus on regardless of our role? That's such a good question. I can't wait to hear what the panel think. Abby, you're holding the microphone, so you can go.
How to be proactive instead of reactive. That's really, really, really hard. And that can be, I think, probably after accountability is probably the hardest thing to actually do, because you start your day and you have a plan and then all these things happen and then you never get to all of those plans. I think the way that you can be more proactive is actually putting time in your diary, setting time in your month, setting time in your space and place for your own professional development, for your time to actually sit and read articles or actually build some knowledge, if it's about actually having time where you get some coaching or you go and have a learning circle or you go and talk about strategic direction or strategic thought. And I think it's about what every one of you have done this morning. Actually come to a session about building your own knowledge, and hopefully you're all not feeling guilty and you're all not sitting going, I better check my phone and see what's going on. Because it's actually about investing time in yourself and investing time in those opportunities to have those concepts and talk about them and think about them, because they are important. So we need to actually be giving ourselves the space and time in our diaries to do it and say that's what we need to do, just as important as responding to what's happening right now, right here and in this moment.
Couldn't agree more, Amanda. I think governance and leadership doesn't just happen. You have to be intentional about it. And I remember, you know, in my work, you know, we go, oh, it's so hard to find time to do research, it's so hard to find time. And a few of us have just, we block out time, we put on email replies and we say, we're doing research, rah, 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 and we make time. Because otherwise, your jobs, as Amanda has said and as we've heard, they're so full on. I think to make time for yourself and to make time to be strategic and invest in those relationships, invest in doing asking the questions and going out for the coffees, it's making time and being intentional.
I do think that's why the strategic plan is so important. You know, we're really good at quality improvement plans, but strategy, you know, the reason why we're doing the vision, the mission, why are we in this game? Because, you know, you've got to have your vision to be able to, when you're reacting to little things, you need to know where you're going and how they can bring you along, because to me that's the exciting part, making a dream come true.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. It's really important to know that if something happens, you're ready. You don't want to panic. I think of it a bit like the lockdown drill. I don't know what's going to cause the lockdown, but I know that I want to have a plan in place for what I'm going to do when that happens. So I want to be ready with my governance and my structures, my communications, my networks, my systems in place for reporting and things like that, and the feedback loop of all that, to know that those people can communicate with me, they know what they need to communicate, you know what questions you need to ask back, you know what structures you need to put in place. I mean, we all did amazing through COVID. I mean, that was a changing feast from day to day as to what we might need to do, whether kids were in, kids were out, how it all looked. Think about how open and ready we were to adapt to change and to look at what structures we already had in place and try and adapt or move those across. You can plan for a lot of things, and we do a lot of risk assessments and plannings, but it's actually that process of doing it and working through our networks, that's what we're going to use no matter what it is. So if you put the time and the effort into your structure and your communication and how that all works and people knowing thresholds for when things need to be up the chain or when information needs to go down, that's when you're going to get a really good response regardless of what the actual thing was.
Thanks, everyone. I would just add there, I think there's a couple of things. One thing is really important, I think, to be kind to yourselves and, like, what's achievable in terms of what you're going to do. And I think that in terms of strategy for the delivery of early education and out of school hours care, a lot of the visions and missions of the people in this room would be really similar, which is to deliver, you know, high-quality learning well-being to children. So we don't necessarily need to overthink it. But for those who are in different nominated supervisor and approved provider roles, and I was having a wonderful session with Ali and the team a little while ago, and I sort of said, you know, there are different challenges for those two roles. So the approved provider don't spend as much time necessarily in the detail of what's going on, but that means they may have more time and capacity to do that strategic work. And I would also look, I don't know if I necessarily see the quality improvement plan and the philosophy as separate from a strategy for a lot of centres. If you're doing that work anyway, you know, having a plan and goals in your quality improvement plan, that to me can be a strategy, and that might be all you need. I'm joining the panel now instead of ever saying it. I can't help myself. I'm very sorry. You've hired the wrong person, Kylie. This is a really good one as well. I'm going to save that to the last question, actually, just a spoiler, teaser for that one. I know we've got a lot of outside school healthcare, amazing providers in the room. With a high number of sort of inexperienced educators entering outside school hours care, what information would you share with them first to start their understanding of NQF law and degrees? That idea that someone's coming in with nothing, there's a huge amount they need to know. What would we prioritise, or how would you start that process of giving them the knowledge they need? No pressure. Yeah.
Okay, that's always a great one, because there are a lot of really enthusiastic young people out there, and we want to encourage them into our centres. We should be encouraging them into work, not sort of saying, wait till you've gone through this, that, or the other. We should be in a position to sort of enter them into the services, enter them into what we do, and train them along the way and help guide them towards what they want to do. So there's some fantastic resources already out there. The NQF online training modules are fabulous for a first starter. We like to have a little survey at the end for ours. We've got an extra form where we say, what did you learn from this? Do you have any questions about it? And what else would you like to be trained on? So this, every time they do one, they still have to fill out this little survey, but we get a good understanding of what they understood from it. I find our induction training, which we've just refreshed, is really great as well. Setting out not only their tasks, but our expectations, what they need to report to people, and what we need to report to them. So this sort of right from the outset, we're giving them enough information to start the job. Then obviously your trial shifts, your mentoring, all of these sorts of things are critically important. Some people will enter the industry at any age and they may not decide that they like working with children. So it's also making them feel comfortable to say, I'm not sure if this is for me, and then either mentoring them or helping them have a look at what they want to do. So I think it's got to be a very open sector in terms of looking at everybody's got something to offer. I mean, we've had people from masters in mathematics come and work with us and did some great science STEM projects with our kids, and then we've had people who are in sporting and have gone on to play in international teams. It's looking broadly across the workforce available and saying, how can I absorb this person into what I'm doing and utilise their skills and give them something back in the process?
Is there anyone else want to tackle that one as well? We could move on to the next one. Again, really great questions coming through. Sorry, this one, given the skill shortages we're facing, I'm going to sort of combine these two questions, but if we think about the role of the approved provider in particular, how can we attract management boards and committees to, I guess, be more involved in service provision? And sort of coming on from the question we just had, how can we do better in terms of induction, onboarding, professional development processes for board directors, for committees who may not have a background or a qualification in children's services? Who wants to tackle that one?
Good question. Look, I think it's about starting with what is the fabulous world of early education care. What do we actually provide in our community? And I know that one of the things that our board, the CS1 board, loved when I was there was actually hearing stories about how our services were changing or bettering the world of children for the future. So sometimes it's actually about, again, making it really tangible, like this is what it looks like, this is what we do, inviting them out to centres, doing more than just a wander through. Hopefully they may stay and chat, actually showing people what we do and how you do it every single day is always great. I think our sector, it's what people need to understand when they're in a directorship or on a board role is there's risk for them as well. So there's risk for educators, there's risk for nominated supervisors, there's risks for everybody. So it's really them having a really clear understanding of the risk that they have and what they need to do at that governance structure level to mitigate some of those risks. And we had a board chair that used to say to us, if we want to negate all of the risks that we have in our organisation, then we have to close all of our services. And that was really great, because what that meant was the rest of the board would actually go, oh, yeah, the only way we can you know, make sure that we have no risk is to close our services. So what do we need to do to mitigate the risks that we have as an organisation or as an individual? And that's about policies, that's about procedures, that's about onboarding, that's about people having a really clear understanding of delegation. And how do we attract people to our sector for both educators? How do we attract people to our sector as directors and, or, you know, directors of services and then directors of organisations? I think that's up to us. We need to be out there, we need to be spruiking, we need to be telling everybody what an amazing, amazing, amazing collective the sector is, what an amazing job that the sector does, and that our organisations make sure that our country can continue to operate through one of the toughest times in the last century during COVID. We were the people that were there every day. We're essential services, and we need to make sure that we stand up and we be proud and we actually value ourselves and value the service that we provide.
Such a great question.
Mm.
I think I was thinking about, you know, when you do your SWOT analysis, what do you need in terms of governance? I think there's a tension in terms of, gosh, we're really desperate for people, it's really hard to get people, so we'll take anyone. And I don't know that that's the answer either. And talking to Betty at morning tea time, it was great hearing, if I may say, unless you want to run up here on the stage, how they changed the constitution so that it allowed for diversity in expertise to be on the board rather than just if you have a parent using the service, you can be on the board. So it's about, again, being strategic about what is it that you want and need and then trying to get that.
I think for me, I just want to add something. Knowing the core, like your focus core, on what we're doing, like the sectors here, because we have commitment to the children. And we're here to provide a quality early childhood education for all the children. So I think for us to encourage more educators to join the sector, it's showing them, like leading by example, showing them the best practice. The first 5 years of a child is very critical. So we have that power. We have that power to change their future, to help them be successful and be the better versions of themselves.
Well, it comes down again to investing in our staff. You know, our greatest resource is our educators. So actually investing wherever we can to provide professional development, listening, getting to know them as people, getting to know their skills, you know, using what we've got.
I think in terms of organisations, it's kind of like anywhere where you need something, you really should give the context of what you need. You should already know your resources, your training, money, equipment that you need for anything, timeframes, outcomes, how you're going to review report. If you're asking somebody for something, give them some good reasons why they should give it to you. Give them measurable ones and things that they can use, because you're going to get more buy-in if you can tell them why, with lots of things that they can understand without overcomplicating the issue. So if you think about a board in particular, they might have specific timeframes, you might get an agenda item. You want to make sure you're conveying exactly what you need and giving them really good reasons, saying, I will do it in this time, or I can do this much in this time. It will take this much, but I will get this outcome with your support and backing. So I think that's really important to remember when we're asking for something, that we need to know what we're asking and make it a reasonable thing for somebody to be able to say yes to.
Thanks, everyone. We've got one more question because we've got to wrap up. I just got to want to add to that as well, because I can't, just from an advocacy perspective as well, I think it would just be so great if the community out there actually valued the work of early education leaders. Like, how great would it be if being a centre director, being a nominated supervisor, that to me is enough skill and qualification to be on a board, any board. But we look at the early childhood sector is 96% women. If we add outside school hours care, it's 91%. That is not the makeup of boards of early education organisations. That is not the makeup of CEOs of early childhood organisations. They are predominantly men. They're predominantly people from finance backgrounds and legal backgrounds. How great if we actually had more early childhood people who had been through that, who were sitting on those boards making those decisions. That would be one way to change that, would be my view. And we could pay people more. Would be wonderful for that work. So last question, I want to get everyone to get do as quick an answer as possible, because I'm going to get in trouble with Kylie if we're going to start over time. But what would be the first most important advice you would give to an emerging leader? Yes.
I think it's getting the support if you need it. So seek support, do some research. There's so many out there. So I think when I started in this role, I used the Guide to the Natural Wellbeing Framework a lot. If you're not sure of something, you ask someone, you ask other nominated supervisors or your group provider, and yeah, just check out the ethical website. There's the keys there.
Relationships. Learn how to build really good relationships, because if you don't know something, find someone who does and become a best friend.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also not being put off by challenges. So we all know in the sector, you know, children, I call them confounding variables, which means they're things that you cannot change or control. So you have to try and control everything else. But as a leader, that means being flexible. So learning to be flexible and learning to just apply your knowledge and seek that support, that's what I would be saying to do.
I would say consciously knowing that being a leader doesn't just mean you've got the title. You actually have to consciously learn about leadership, consciously learn about what your style is, how you interact and engage, what you need to do for staff. So actually take the opportunity to see it as a learning opportunity for you to actually have an understanding to build that skill. It is a skill and you need to be a conscious leader.
Yeah, I was going to use the word intentional. decide to lead and arm yourself with, you don't do it alone, you don't have to do it alone. Arm yourself with knowledge and with people around you. And know why you're doing it, I think, because it will get tough. But if you know why you're doing it and where you want to go, what you want to achieve, that can sustain you.
All right, well, we've sort of come to the end of our session, but I really wanted to thank each of our panel members and Liam for their fantastic advice that they've given us and the wonderful thoughts around leadership and governance, around investing in our staff, in our children, in our service. And bringing it all together, just noting that governance is the glue. I think that was very early on. Governance is the glue. And so it's really important to spend time in that space. And we hope that our presentation today sparks some conversations that you can take away and work with your colleagues on. Obviously, everybody's governance structures are different, and so it can be looking at that broader structure, or as those single service providers, you know, working with your direct team and coming up with your great strategic plan and improvement plans. Thank you so much for being here today. I hope you had a great time.